Welcome to our program. I'm Rhonda McBride, and always happy to be here to open the door to some great conversations that we have for you today on Juno Afternoon. Adventures in Learning, how Inspiring Girls Expeditions uses the outdoors to get girls hooked on science. Why, it's an exciting time at the University of Alaska Southeast. Some new partnerships that bring arts to the forefront. And the new Dean of Arts and Sciences is here to share the big news. Therapeutic foster care. Why it offers hope for children who must overcome abuse and neglect. Also, Big Brothers, Big Sisters celebrates National Mentoring Month with stories of how being mentored has made all the difference. Some of what you can look forward to on Juno Afternoon. A winter weather advisory remains in effect for Juno tonight. Meteorologists at the National Weather Service describe what they call an atmospheric river moving in late this week and remaining through the weekend. It will bring warmer temperatures, rising snow levels, and heavy rounds of rain. Tonight, rain and snow in the forecast with an accumulation of up to 1 inch, lows in the mid-30s, winds out of the southeast, 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, snow in the morning and warming up with highs in the lower 40s. And tomorrow night, it all turns to rain, heavy at times with lows in the upper 30s. For Friday, heavy rain expected in the morning, highs in the lower 40s. Friday night, more rain. And that pattern of rain continues pretty much through Monday with lows around 40. Saturday and Sunday, the recipe is simple. Rain, lows in the upper 30s, highs in the 40s. The sun rises tomorrow at 8:24, sets at 3:52 in the afternoon. We have 7 hours, 28 minutes of daylight.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akwan. The Tlinedi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on what were once tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from their homes from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and the future.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yitin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta kanakaya ha anikak gunish cheese.
And Gunach Chish for being here with us today. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I am Rhonda McBride here with you. You've heard a lot about the three R's in academics, but how about the three C's? Curiosity, creativity, and courage. These are important traits to embrace and very much needed for women who are pursuing careers in science. And although a lot of progress has been made, the gender gap is still huge. That's why a group called Inspiring Girls Expeditions is trying to get girls hooked on science at an early age by recruiting them for wilderness adventures in high school. And we have some pretty exciting ones here in Alaska. And here to tell us about it, we have Joanna Young. She is the Alaska Program Director for Inspiring Girls Expeditions. And Jin Yue Trousel, Girls on Ice in Alaska. She's a 2021 alumnus. And we also have Sierra Lloyd. She also participated in the Girls on Water 2019 program. So I'm going to start with you, Joanna. because I just feel so incredibly, I hate to use the word jealous, but I wish that these kind of programs had been around when I was a kid.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I really wish that had been the case. I would have been able to discover science and the outdoors so much earlier than I did, sort of on my own.
You know, that is such a wonderful experience that kids are getting offered today. How long has this program been around and where did it get started?
Yeah, the program actually has been around since 1999. We started with just the Girls on Ice program that was offered in the Cascades in Washington State. And that was started by our director, Aaron Pettit. And in 2012, we grew to have a program here in Alaska that's called Girls on Ice Alaska. And since then, we've just grown and expanded. And now we have branches and expeditions in Colorado, Oregon, Canada, Switzerland, Austria, and soon to be New Zealand. So we've really just grown and have expeditions all over the place now.
Boy, we'll have to talk with you more about the impact of these expeditions. But I want to go to Jinyue and Sierra. First of all, can you give us an update on your educational life? Where are you now in school? And then maybe tell us what you like best about the program. And we'll start with you, Jinyue.
Yeah, so I'm a senior in high school right now, and I have been doing lots of college applications, and I've been thick into writing essays and all of that. Yeah.
Wow. And then
my favorite part about the expedition, I think it's just such a great way to try something new. And it's just a great, great community to do that.
A way to stretch your boundaries in some unexpected ways, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I'll definitely take what I've learned and use that in the future in college and beyond.
So Sierra, where are you in school right now?
I am a sophomore at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I'm currently pursuing a degree in chemical oceanography, which was a great deal inspired by my time in a Girls on Water. I got to do some hands-on research while I was out there, and I loved it so much that this is what I want to do when I'm out of school.
So I forgot to ask each of you, too, is where are you from? What's your home community, Sierra?
Oh, I'm from Juneau.
All right. So you can put what you know to practice right here at home. And you...
That's my goal.
And you, Jin Yue, where are you from?
I'm also from Juneau, too.
Ah, well, that is wonderful that you are both from this community, so young women in this community can go and talk to you about it. So, Sierra, what did you like best about this program?
Well, before this program, I'm someone who's really into the outdoors and science, and I had some trouble kind of finding friends with super similar interests to me. And it just seemed like the perfect opportunity to make new friends who were kind of going down the same path as me. And I did exactly that. And then the additional, like field experience that I got was just phenomenal.
Do you think that Junoites have a leg up just because the natural environment is all around us? I mean, you don't have to go far to find wilderness.
This is very true. Yeah, I mean, I think all of Alaska has a leg up. I mean, here at Fairbanks, we've got a lot of trails. And I mean, it's a different environment, but it does remind me a lot of home in that it's very easy to get outdoors and have some fun.
Well, let's talk about getting outdoors and having some fun, Joanna. I mean, how many different kinds of expeditions do you have in Alaska? And And what's the timetable for those?
We've got three expeditions running this summer. The first one is called Girls on Ice Alaska, and it is based out of Fairbanks, but we end up going into the Alaska Range onto a glacier, and that happens in June. The next one we have is called Girls on Water, which is what Sierra went to, and that takes place based out of Homer in Kachemak Bay, and that happens in July, and it's a sea kayaking program. And then our newest program is called Girls in the Forest, and it takes place on the Chena River near Fairbanks, and it happens in August, and that is a hiking and pack rafting expedition.
So I guess the question is how many slots do you have for the young people, and how do you apply to get them, and does it cost you an arm and a leg to be a part of this?
Those are great questions. Well, for the expeditions themselves, we've got 27 spots. There are 9 participants on each program and about 3 to 4 instructors. So a really nice ratio of instructors to participants. We also have, we're partners with several of our other branches that I mentioned. So there are also opportunities for Alaskans to get accepted onto other programs in other parts of the U.S. or North America as well. So they can, anyone interested can apply on inspiringgirls.org, and you can make your way to our application website. And the real special and unique thing about our program, which I think really sets us apart from so many others, is that it is completely tuition free. And so we cover everything that any participant would need. There's no cost. We provide gear, transportation, all of the food, all the and we even cover travel to the start of the program if the participant is unable to provide that themselves or their families. So really, there's no financial barrier to having anybody on these programs. And I think that's what really makes us special.
So I imagine, though, that you probably have more applicants than you have openings. So how do you go about winnowing down the candidates?
Yeah, our application process is, well, it's all about asking a series of short essay questions, and they're sort of designed just to get to know the unique aspects of that person and what their lives are like and what their interests are. And I would say, you know, to give a little bit of a leg up to anyone listening who's thinking of applying, what we really like to see is just, you know, passion and excitement about the outdoors or science. And if you can express that, you know, through your essay questions, then that's really what we're looking for. We're not looking for grades. We don't ask about, you know, past achievements or past opportunities. We're just looking for passion and interest, and especially, you know, catered to those who haven't had a chance to do anything like this before. So I would really nudge anyone who's thinking about it, but who's not quite sure if they're right for the program to check out our website and give us a look, because you might be exactly who we're looking for. We're always excited to have folks on the program who've never done something like this before.
So I want to turn to Yin Yue and Sierra and just ask you a little bit more about how the expedition affected your life. Because it's just a short period of time, but what did you take away from it?
Yeah, so I wanted to share one of our last activities that we did as a group was to write down 3 things that we were feeling right at that moment. And one of my words was accomplished. I was really nervous about it beforehand. And afterwards, I made new friends and I got to camp on a glacier, and I just put myself out there and I got to see what I was capable of doing. And that just made me feel really accomplished and empowered.
Well, we all have trouble mustering the confidence sometimes to do things. So it sounds like this whole exercise is a confidence booster. How about you, Sierra?
I mean, it's really the Girls on Water expedition. It really set me on the path that I'm on today. When I went into it, I wasn't totally sure what I wanted to do. I kind of had an idea that I wanted to go into something science, but I didn't know for sure. I didn't know what I wanted my life to look like after college. And then I went on this expedition and I met all of these young women who were had scientific minds and were adventurous. And we all supported and uplifted each other throughout the entire expedition. And it made me realize that that was being outdoors, doing science, especially surrounding the ocean, because I was on the sea kayaking expedition. That was what I wanted to do. And I made some really great friends on that expedition, one of whom I still talk to every day. And it was just awesome to get to know all of them.
You know, I can see what you're saying, that as an adolescent, as a teen, there is this feeling of being alone sometimes, or feeling like you're the odd one out. And I kind of had that experience going to a music camp in high school, finding kids with a similar passion, and then I didn't feel so odd. But I guess one of the things I wanted to talk about, and I'll go back to you, Joanna, for this, is a lot of kids might not apply for something like this because they would say, oh, I'm not good at math. I can't be a scientist. Or, you know, they may have barriers that make them think they can't apply for something like this. So, and I see that this program combines art and science. Do you think that helps with that, for people to get over their fears that this can be a wonderful thing for them and they'll fit in?
Absolutely. I think the person you've just described who thinks, I'm not good at science because I'm not good at math, or, you know, this isn't for me, that's exactly the type of person who we're trying to reach and trying to get out into the field to see what science really looks like when you're actually doing it in the field. I think it's quite different than what a lot of us think it might look like, especially, you know, from spending so much time in the classroom, sort of learning about science from textbooks. This is just a really unique opportunity to see what real field science looks like. And yes, absolutely, the sort of integration of science and art on our program is another really special characteristic that I think helps to bring in some really creative ways to look at the natural world. And I think that's very complementary for science. We're just looking at the landscape through slightly different lenses. You know, a scientist might look at a mountain ridge and sort of wonder how it's formed and what processes built it. But an artist might look at that same ridge and be interested in the colors and textures that they can see. And we explore sort of all of these different ways of looking at the landscape on the program. And so, yes, if you're interested in art, please check us out again. We're at inspiringgirls.org. And the last day to start an application, I should say, is January 24th. So we're coming up on that deadline now.
All right. And so Juno girls know where to turn to. They have Yinyue and Sierra to talk with, someone who they may even know. Well, I want to thank all of you for being here with us and just sharing your experiences. And Johanna Young, we really appreciate all the information. Yinyue Trossel and Sierra Lloyd, thank you. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Thank you for being here with us. We have had one heck of a time these last couple of years coping with COVID in our community, and sometimes it's hard to realize that these are really exciting times. Lots of wonderful things have been coming to fruition. The Sea Alaska Heritage Foundation's vision of turning Juno into a Northwest Coast arts capital. And we've seen that the pandemic has not dampened enthusiasm for the arts, as many organizations students have innovated, found creative workarounds to the problems caused by preventing COVID. And our guest today really believes in seizing the moment. Karen Silkaitis, she's the Dean of Arts and Sciences at the University of Alaska Southeast. And Karen, I want to welcome you because I think this is our very first interview with you on Juno Afternoon. And boy, you have an interesting background that I'm going to be excited to find out about.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Yes, it's my first time.
You know, you have been an actress and you've got film credits from network TV shows. You know, people can go on Netflix and find your performances. You've done live theater and you have also taught theater and gender sexuality studies, just a really groundbreaking kind of subject. And so I guess, you know, it's kind of, to me, an unusual resume for a College of Arts and Sciences dean. You just expect because Juno does a lot of research, scientific research, whales, fisheries, forests, that you'd figure that they would have a dean that would kind of have that background. So, but apparently Juno has chosen you, and I guess the big question is, why did you choose Juno?
I think that is a great question. So it's a complex answer, but here's the answer I'm going to give you. And one is, I think we are multifaceted people. And one side of me is the theater person, the artist. And I've spent a lot of my life performing and directing. I've, you know, directed professional opera, and I've been an actor, like you say. I've done a lot of television and film. I've done a lot of theater. And I love that part of my life. I'm also a pedagogue, and my own research is a lot of gender and sexuality studies, feminist theory in the theater is sort of my own personal research, and I love that as well. The other side of me, though, I call the science geek, and if I had not gone into theater, I would have absolutely have gone into marine biology. And I am really obsessed with the ocean. I'm an avid scuba diver. Snorkeler. If I'm not doing theater, I've always been traveling. And when I travel, I choose places where I can be in the ocean. When COVID hit, theater completely shut down. As any of your folks here in Juneau can tell you, the arts have really suffered when it came to the pandemic. And I was the artistic director of my own theater company in Chicago. And wow, the theater community and artists and their wages, as you know, from Broadway, right? Broadway shut down completely. And so many of my friends work on Broadway and their livelihoods have suffered tremendously since the pandemic started. But in my own life, when I was sort of sent home, I was leading probably one of the largest theater programs in the country at the time at Columbia College Chicago, and we all got sent home. And I had to reassess my life. My theater company closed down. And I was at home with my wife, my children, and I had to think about what I wanted out of my life. And I said to my spouse, I think we need to change. And I want to change jobs. I want to change locations. And being home with my family gave me a sense of what I wanted out of work-life balance, being an academic, the kind of place I might want to work. And I started to narrow my locale. And my criteria were ocean, mountains, lakes, as I looked for my new position. And wow, did Juno fit the bill. And I've been really excited working with the faculty in the natural sciences. But you have to remember, when you're looking at a dean of arts and sciences, the arts are just as big of a part as the sciences. And Juno had deans previous to me that were researchers and specialized in the sciences, but they had not had a dean with specialty in the humanities. And I think they were excited to have a new dean with a humanities focus, but who also really loved the sciences, because I'm the secret science geek whose passion is ocean conservation. I study and read about the problem of plastics in our oceans and things like that. So I have a healthy respect for the sciences, but I'm a humanities faculty member. And I think the faculty were excited about my focus and also my wealth of experiences with anti-racism and bystander work. I've been a Title IX investigator. And I bring a lot of work with anti-racism work. And I think that that is like those kinds of things are just as important in a dean as kind of your area of specialty. I think that kind of the full package is what they were interested in. But our scientists are brilliant. And boy, do I love spending time at the Anderson Building and the wet lab and looking at the critters that they play with. I love being down there and scuba diving with, for example, Mike Navarro, one of our faculty members at the Anderson Building, is next on my list.
Well, it sounds like you have found a job that kind of brings all your past experiences together. And you're here today to tell us about some of the new partnerships that the College of Arts and Sciences has. And of course, the first one is Perseverance Theater, which I'm not surprised given your background. But tell us about this partnership. That sounds exciting.
It is. So as a theater person, of course, I had to make contact with this major professional theater company in Alaska. And a colleague of mine in Chicago, who was born and raised in Anchorage, made the contact between myself and Leslie Ishii. And we had breakfast and we spoke. And one of the things that I was committed to was reviving an old MOU that existed between UAS and Perseverance. And so I took a look at that language and we revived it, and they're really excited about it and I'm really excited about it. And what that does is give Perseverance a little bit of financial assistance. And in return, what they give us is guest lecturing at the university. It provides UAS nights for all of their shows. So for example, they're doing two really incredible shows this spring. They're doing The Brothers Paranormal and Fun Home. And boy, I cannot wait to see Fun Home. It's one of my favorite shows. And so that allows faculty, staff, and students to go see their shows at this like UAS themed night. And that'll be, they can also provide a talk back for our students, which is really exciting. And then Leslie created this wonderful PDF, which I can circulate to the faculty. It talks about the shows, the themes, and the faculty can then take that and think about what kind of guest talk they might want to have in their class. Maybe they can incorporate the readings. So maybe next fall, we can even do that maybe more in advance, and they can incorporate the actual script into a class. So these are really exciting things for us to have. I mean, think about even a business class, right? If somebody from Perseverance can come in and talk about what it might be like to run a nonprofit. So these kind of partnerships are so key for our students to have also just that kind of cultural experience. So I'm just thrilled.
I am so fascinated by Juno as an arts community, because I'm new here like yourself. I moved here about a year ago. I've lived in Alaska, so I'm familiar with Juno, but in an identity as the state capital for politics. And to move here is such a delight, to find, several, not one, but several theater companies, and also, to find a symphony and so much. Every time you turn around, there is something to partake of. And, I just wonder, do you think that Juno is ripe for a lot of things because of the art culture that it has, that it hasn't capitalized on yet?
I think Juno is such a vibrant art scene. And I was actually, I was surprised. I heard that there was a lot of art here, but now that I've arrived and really seen, Perseverance invited me to their, it was their end of the year barbecue. And when I went to that event, I met all of these other theater companies who had come to Perseverance, who had come to their end of the year barbecue. And I started to meet these members of these other theater companies who said, oh, I'm with this theater company and I'm with this theater company, you should come. And I started to meet, again, folks from like the symphony and from arts organizations. And I started to realize this vibrant scene here in Juno that I'm only just learning about and just beginning to partake in. And I do think there's even more potential, particularly once we live in whatever this post-COVID world looks like, right? As the arts really pick up again and get going. I've learned recently about Juno Dance Theater and the dance community here in Juno. So I think it's quite spectacular. There's also a really interesting drag scene here in Juno that I'm excited to learn more about. There's so much. And a faculty member recently said to me, if you don't know what to do on a given weekend, like, you're not looking, because there's always something happening artistically.
You know, there is. And even in the time of COVID, people have managed to push through and come up with options that are enjoyable as well. And I wanted, before we run out of time, I wanted to talk to you about the second partnership that you've developed with Sea Alaska Heritage Institute to work with them on their vision of turning Juneau into a capital for Northwest Coast arts.
So we've had some ongoing grants, and two in particular, and one is the Language Pathways grant that focuses on language revitalization. And then the second one has to do with Northwest Coast art. And it has been an ongoing grant, but this year's grant I'm particularly excited about. So it's through the U.S. Department of Education, Alaska Native Education Program, and it's called a Box of Treasures grant. And I'm the PI on that grant, which basically means a program director. And this one I'm excited about because it's going to provide funds for a new full-time position at UAS in Northwest Coast Art. And we're just beginning that search for the position shortly. So the committee's just been formed for this new, brand new full-time position. Additionally, the scholarship, it's going to provide awards to 10 Alaska Native students enrolled in Northwest Coast Art. This grant also gives support to 6 high schools and 3 school districts to develop Northwest Coast Arts dual credit courses, adjunct packets. So we're registering high school students then for dual credit courses for fall and spring classes. And I think that's a great partnership between the area high schools and UAS. So it's just a really exciting grant. And I'm always incredibly thankful. We do, you know, nearly weekly meetings with Sea Alaska Heritage. And I've been so excited getting to know their staff. Their staff is so incredibly committed to Northwest Coast art. And the video, the YouTube videos that I sent you are focused on, you know, 3 particular areas where we're offering our courses. And that's carving, weaving, and form line. And we just produced those new videos, and I'm so excited. I think they're powerful. I think they're exciting. They teach, they give some registration information for our courses, but they're just beautifully developed videos.
I'll put up the link on our Juneau Afternoon webpage later on, and they can look for this particular program, and they'll see the links to your YouTube videos. They are impressive. Just before we go, I just wanted to ask you, do you think that this whole vision that's evolving with Sea Alaska Heritage Institute could perhaps put UAS on the map as far as a hub for Indigenous cultures in Alaska and beyond?
Well, I hope so. And also, we do have an Alaska Native Success Initiative happening throughout Alaska. And I do hope this really puts us on a map in new and interesting ways. And additionally, I did, you know, I also kind of emailed you that PDF about that scholarship that we have, particularly for Native and rural students, about scholarships in STEM fields, you know, for Native students that might be interested in science. And that's quite a bit of money available. And we really do. So not only Northwest Coast Art, right, but also opportunities that we have for Alaska Native students interested in science. So I think we have a lot of opportunities for rural and Native students either way, whether they're interested in art or whether they're interested in science. We've got so many opportunities for UAS.
Thank you, Karen, for being here with us. Karen Silkaitis, Dean of Arts and Sciences at the University of Alaska Southeast. This is a lot of good news, which we could use on this snowy, wintry day about to turn soggy. So thanks so much for being here with us. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was so great to speak with you today.
Sunday afternoons in Southeast Alaska are full of potential. Whether you're heading out for an adventure or spending it quietly at home, whatever you choose, let the Juneau Symphony be your soundtrack. You'll hear new concerts, favorite performances, original compositions, and more from world-class musicians right here in Juneau. Tune in to Sundays with the Juneau Symphony, Sunday afternoons at 1 p.m. on KRNN Juneau, 102.7 FM.
Support for National Native News and Juno Afternoon comes from Clinkin and Haida social enterprises like Sacred Grounds Coffee, Sacred Shine Auto Detailing, and Smokehouse Catering. Learn more at www.ccthita-nsn.gov. Clinkin and Haida, local, indigenous, proud.
Well, there are always more kids in need of foster care than there are families. And in most cases, these children need more than just a home, but someone who understands the circumstances that put children into foster care. And joining us now, Forrest Clow. He is the community-based services manager for Juno Youth Services and the case manager for its therapeutic foster care program. Well, Forrest, one of the things that I think people may wonder about is they haven't heard that term, therapeutic foster care. That's a new one for me anyway. Can you explain how it's different from just foster care?
I would love to. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that often is a new term for people, though it's been around for quite a while. But therapeutic foster care, or TFC, is a service for kids whose needs can't be met in their family home or in a traditional foster home. And often that's because of their behavior. And often these kids have pretty extensive trauma histories. It gets used a lot for kids who are transitioning out of a higher level of care. So a kid who has been in a hospital or a residential treatment facility or anything like that, and is not yet at a point where they're able to return home to their family. And that's where therapeutic foster parents come in.
Yeah, that sounds like that would be a tremendous responsibility, not just to take a child that doesn't have these challenges, but and as a person, I would be kind of leery about doing this, wondering if I might do more harm to the child than good because I'm not trained.
And I think that's a common worry that people have coming in. And I think there's a few different things that it's really important for people to understand. And the first one is that as part of our program, we provide just a ton of training to foster parents. And then from there, once they're trained up and once they're licensed, we provide a ton of support to them. So we don't place a kid with people and then say, hey, see you, good luck. It's nothing like that. You have a professional team with you the whole time. You're a member of that kid's treatment team, and we're all working together toward the same goal with that kid. So there's a lot of supports in place for those parents. The other factor is I think that when people hear about behavior, people can get nervous about that and thinking, oh my gosh, this is going to be something that I can't handle. All these are great kids who haven't had a fair chance in life. And typically when people haven't had a fair chance in life, we see behaviors come up. These are kids who've been exposed to trauma, who have long trauma histories. And because of it, there are some behaviors to manage, but they're nothing that needs to be scary at all to people. And we're here to support people along that path and get people trained up and get people licensed and get people the supports they need to make it so that they're able to be really successful with those kids.
Well, today we just don't have enough time to get into some really interesting things to find out about this. But first of all, just quickly, can you tell us what kind of people you're looking for? Because a lot of people may not know that they might be the right person to do something like this.
Yeah, that's something that we see a lot and that we hear a lot. And I think that a lot of people have a perception that in order to be a foster parent, you need to have your life completely squared away. You need to own a home. You need to have plenty of money. None of that is true. In order to be a foster parent, you need to have a desire to help kids. You need to have time in your life to devote to kids, and you need to have space in your home for kids. And if you have those things and you're someone who has thought about this or someone who wants to take this step or even just someone who wants to explore it a little bit more, we would love to talk to you about that because we have seen that tons of different people from tons of different backgrounds can be incredibly successful foster parents.
So if you are interested, if this conversation has piqued your interest, how do you go about connecting?
Yeah, so there's a couple different ways to do that. One real easy way is just to call me directly. I manage our foster care program, and I would love to talk to anyone about it. My number is 907-523-6604. And then the other option for anything related to JYS, whether it's services for kids, whether it's that you want to become a foster parent, anything, you can call our link department. And they handle everything on the front end for us. And their number is 907-789-7610.
All right. So probably folks don't have a pencil or pen handy to write this down. So is there a website you can point us to?
There is. And that's another great option, is just to go to jys.org or just Google Juno Youth Services or JYS. We'll all come up every time.
Well, Forrest, we want you to come back again and maybe bring a foster family with you so we can talk a little bit more about their experience, and maybe they can help us see how we might find it as a possibility for ourselves.
That would be wonderful. We have some amazing foster parents who I'm sure would love to do that, and I would be really excited about the opportunity to come on and share that with people.
Well, thank you for coming on, Forrest, and just giving us a sense of what this is all about, because it's certainly really important to make sure that kids get some help, and probably a foster family can make all the difference, the right family with the right child.
Absolutely. It's an amazing opportunity for people who really want to make a difference in kids' lives.
All right. Well, we want to thank you, Forrest Clough with Juno Youth Services. You are listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Thank you for being here with us. January is National Mentoring Month, and Big Brothers Big Sisters is using this opportunity to ask you this question: who mentored you? Well, perhaps, you know, we just don't often stop to think about how mentors have shaped our lives or what our lives would be like without these mentors. And that's why we have Jill Lush and Corrine Conlon with us today from Big Brothers and Big Sisters. And Jill Lush is CEO for Big Brothers Big Sisters in Alaska. And Corrine also is a manager, a community manager for Juno. So I guess, Jill, let's go ahead and start with you. And maybe you could start off by telling us why you're a believer in mentorship.
Thanks so much for having us. And it's really exciting to be here to talk about National Mentoring Month. And so much of that is because of our belief and commitment to this mission. And the Big Brothers Big Sisters mission is all about one-to-one mentoring relationships that ignite the power and the promise of youth. And I believe in it so much because I've had the great fortune of being mentored personally and professionally by so many people in my life. And because of that, I think I've completely bought into the phrase that it truly takes a village to raise a child. And so part of what we're out there doing is trying to recruit more people to join us and to mentor and to join us in both the life-changing impacts that it has on the youth, but also the ways that it can personally benefit you as a volunteer.
So many of us, you know, no longer live in these big extended families that people once had. So they did have uncles and aunties that served mm-hmm. as mentors traditionally. So what about Big Brother, Big Sisters? How do they replicate that?
Well, it certainly isn't the same thing. I wouldn't say that it's necessarily a replacement for a family, but it's a relationship that is an addition that adds value to your life. So one thing that is so cool about the mentors that we recruit is that the most important thing about them is that they just show up. Like, they don't need to be perfect people that are having the perfect relationship with the child and doing every single thing right. It's about them seeing this child for who they are and valuing them and helping instill a sense of belonging for this child so that they can build their self-confidence and know who they are and go out into the community in the ways that we want to see our children raised, really an honoring community. And maybe that's the way that they're like families and extended families.
So, Corrine, how big of a footprint does Big Brothers Big Sisters have in Juno, and how does that compare statewide?
Well, I mean, right now we have 30 matches in Juno, and We are actively looking for more bigs and more littles so that we can match. A lot of what we do is really try to find the right fit for the big and the little. And so even though we have a couple of kids who are waiting for a big and we have some great volunteers coming in, we want to make sure that they're a good fit. So throughout the state, you know, we have matches in Anchorage, Mat-Su area, we have it in Fairbanks. There's some matches in Hoonah and Homer as well, and Haines and Sitka. So throughout the state, we have a lot. I think as any time, I think we always want to have more. If we could have every youth have a mentor, I think that would be a better community where we live in.
So I want to bring in Chloe Cavanaugh. She has joined us, and she has had the benefits of having had a big sister. She was, I guess, what you call a little, because they're little and they're bigs, right? That's the terminology. Chloe, welcome to our program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, we are really excited to hear about your experience. How many years did you have that relationship with your big?
Gosh, I was matched with my big for 10 years, starting at age 8 and then aging out at age 18. But it's still a friendship that I value and hold on to. So you could say we were matched for 10 years, but really it's been a lifelong friendship and continues on till this day.
And what kind of things did you do over the years with your big sister?
Gosh, we were a part of the Big Brother, Big Sister overnight that they put on at Echo Ranch. We would go to bowling events. I'd come over for family dinners. Really, my big's family became a really big part of my family. And really, my big participated in anything I had going on, any sports, and was really just a huge cheerleader in my life.
And why is it good to have that outside person that not necessarily is within the family?
You know, I think it creates an opportunity to really have a mentorship relationship rather than a family relationship, where they really are a neutral space for you to start that relationship however you want to. And they're people that are more like friends than family. So you trust them with more, and you're able to establish the relationship you want to establish. We all think of that person growing up who really pushed us and got us through and listened to us. And it really is that opportunity for even people with non-traditional families to have that in a way that isn't necessarily family, but is very, very important.
Jill, I love the mission statement for Big Brothers Big Sisters: to create and support one-on-one mentoring relationships that ignite the promise of youth. And you mentioned that earlier. That's such a great mission statement, but it seems like this would be really hard to do in some ways.
Well, you know, what we are finding is that these relationships that we help foster, that the youth are actually reporting back that they're feeling more socially accepted, that they're making better choices, that they're doing better in school. And then, you know, just listening to Chloe, I mean, Chloe is the reason why we do this. It's to hear about how this relationship impacts her life. And I think some of it is really, you know, that's the best case, is that we hear from a former little, and they just talk about, like, I still really care about my big, or I care about the things that the big taught me about myself. And so it really is, it's a whole lot more simple, I think, for bigs than it might sound. I think for some people, when you hear about it and we're saying, hey, you, we want you to come volunteer, that they're intimidated, that they have to be perfect, or they have to have something to offer. I mean, the thing about it is if you are a big, or if you are interested, that's what we need. We just need you. And that's what the youth needs too. And we kind of do the work on the back end. You know, we find out about you. We find out about your likes, your interests, your skills, your talents, your COVID safety protocols, the way that your family culture operates. And then we find the same things out about the family with the youth. And then we do the work of saying, you know what, this person and that youth, they're going to make a good match, and we're going to support them along the way.
So we've got about just a minute left here, and I'm just wondering if you can tell us if we are at all interested after hearing this conversation, what do we do to connect?
Corrine, why don't you take this one? Because if you're in Juneau, you're going to be talking to Corrine.
That's right. So you can call the office number. I'm happy to talk to you. That's 907-290-7691. Or you can go to our website at bbbsak.org. So Big Brothers Big Sisters Alaska, ak.org. And you can select Become a Big. Or we also are in need of little, so youth ages 6 to 16. So Get a Big is another selection you can make. If you're a parent, if you're a guardian, if you know someone in the community that you think that child could benefit from a mentor, then please go to the website and select that. And we will talk with you and make sure it's a good fit for you.
All right. Well, I want to thank all of you for being here with us, Jill Lush, Corrine Conlon, and Chloe Cavanaugh with Big Brothers Big Sisters. Thanks for sharing this experience, and hopefully some people will be calling you soon. Thanks so much.